Your dreams are bigger, bolder, and more badass than the life you're living now, but something just keeps getting in the way. Join certified coach and former therapist Diane Wingert for the Driven Woman podcast. She'll show you how to get rid of whatever is holding you back so you can stop spinning your wheels and up-level your life. Get ready to hop in and buckle up. This is the Driven Woman podcast, and we're heading for the fast lane.
Driven woman, if you have an online business or even a brick and mortar business that you market online, you are a content creator. Now, that may be perfectly obvious or come as a shock, but content includes blogs, podcasts, YouTube channels, email sequences, sales pages, newsletters, social media posts, and even short-form videos for TikTok, LinkedIn, Instagram, or Facebook. I mean, content is everywhere. And in order to leverage the know, like, and trust factor, you really need to have a strategy, not just put yourself out there in some random way and hope for the best. Now, whether you have a lot to say, but it's kind of all over the place, or your mind goes completely blank the minute you sit down in front of your laptop to write an email sequence, there really is hope for you. Today's guest on the Driven Woman podcast is Abby Herman. Abby was an elementary school teacher who took her talent for writing and teaching and launched a business as a content strategist over a decade ago. Abby helps online entrepreneurs to create awareness, to educate and inform, demonstrate their expertise, convert consumers to customers, and help them create long-lasting relationships. She has a way of thinking about content creation that takes the guessing and stressing right out of it, making it more simple and sustainable than you ever dreamed of. Now, I first learned of Abby over a year ago. I heard her being interviewed on a podcast, and I thought, I need to connect with this lady. But it didn't actually happen in a meaningful way until we both joined the Podwise Co-op, a membership community for podcasters run by Angie Trueblood. This happened just a couple of months ago, and we immediately realized we need to get to know each other. The day this episode is being published is actually the day that Abby is interviewing me for her podcast, The Content Experiment. I mean, how's that for synchronicity? So here's a couple of the highlights I want you to listen for in today's conversation. What minimum viable content marketing looks like. I mean, doesn't that just sound like such a relief? Minimum viable content marketing. We're going to get into that in a big way. How Abby rebranded her podcast and business along these lines because of a health problem and the journey that it took her on. Personal values and how they show up in the way we create content, and the difference between talking a lot and having a lot to say. We also get into things like what are easy ways to stay top of mind with former clients and customers you're not currently working with, and even what content to give away for free and what to charge for. Now, all the online entrepreneurs that I talk to have these questions and so much more about content. So I just knew Abby had to get on this podcast and get it all cleared up for us. So I'm looking forward to sharing this conversation with you. You might want to have a pen handy because she drops a lot of value bombs. Here we go. So I know I'm always talking about the amazing women that I meet through this podcast, and it's still absolutely true. Some of the ones I really resonate with the most are, like me, people who had a previous career, who have made the leap into online business and podcasting. Today, our guest is Abby Herman, who I first encountered through a podcast a year ago. And one thing leads to another. Now we are actually both in the same community of female podcasters. Abby is a former teacher turned content strategist and host of the podcast, The Content Experiment. One of the reasons she's here today is because I really like a couple of things about the way she views content. One, she's teaching about minimum viable content marketing, which is so important because most people try to do too little or too much or the wrong thing, get frustrated with their results, and give up. So she's going to help us with that. But today specifically, I've invited Abby to talk about how she views the customer journey. Most people who create content, and I'm speaking to you if you have a blog, a podcast, a YouTube channel, or regularly show up on TikTok, Facebook Lives, Instagram Lives, you are a content creator, even though you're something else, a coach, a consultant, a business owner, an agency owner, or so forth. You create content. But if you are creating content by the seat of your pants or following an outdated model, you are not doing it in the optimal way that actually helps people find you, get to know you, fall in love with you, and become your customers. So that's what we are going to unpack and talk about today. Welcome, Abby.
Thank you so much. What a great intro. I'm excited to be here.
Can I ask you first, before we start going into your view of the customer journey, how you arrived at the name for your podcast? Because I know it had a different name earlier, and I know that you have a unique perspective on content because your new podcast title is The Content Experiment. Unpack that for us, will you?
Yes. I have had a love-hate relationship with naming my business for the life of the business. And my business name before was Write Solutions. And because I was doing writing when I first left my teaching job and came into this space full time, you know, I really struggled with it a lot. So fast forward, and I'm going to go off on a tangent here for a second, because I don't know that you know this part of the story, but in 2020, in the spring, early summer of 2020, I went on a health journey where I was having a lot of health issues. And, you know, I'm in my late 40s. And so I kind of was just not feeling good. And I met with a functional medicine practitioner. I promise this relates to my business.
I love tangents, so you don't need to apologize.
Okay, good. This is also pretty vulnerable too. But so I met with a functional medicine practitioner, and we did a bunch of tests, and I had to make a bunch of lifestyle changes. One of those things that she told me I needed to do for at least 3 months was quit drinking. And so I went on a journey of sobriety, if you will, and quitting drinking. I was, you know, full disclosure, I was drinking way too much at the time. And it, you know, I decided a couple of months later, I decided like this was something that I needed to do for myself forever. And so I started doing some research on just, you know, living sober, living, not drinking at all. And found a woman, Annie Grace, and she has a book called I can't remember the title.
Is it The Alcohol Experiment?
The Alcohol Experiment. Thank you so much. Yes. And so the whole premise of the book, and, you know, aside from telling you the science behind alcohol and why it's so damaging to you and the things it does to our bodies and to our brains, aside from that, the message that I got was the experimentation. So figuring out what works for you and what you need to do, what changes you need to make in your life and your lifestyle in order to, you know, stay away from alcohol and to just not drink. And so that kind of morphed into the content experiment, because there are different things, you know, there's no one right path for everyone. There's no one right path, no matter what you're doing in your life, whether it's alcohol related or fitness or business or how you want to, you know, whether you want to have kids or not, whatever. There's no one right path, and everybody can make their own decisions and make their own, you know, have little experiments along the way of what works for you. We were just talking about my little home experiment where I made a big lifestyle change where I moved across town into an area that I'm not happy in. And that was a nice experiment. I did it. And now I can make a change and do something different, which I'm in the process of doing. So the content experiment came about from this idea that we don't have to take the same path. Every business is different. And we also don't have to have the whole thing figured out. We don't need to have our entire business, our entire content plan, our entire, you know, content journey, business journey figured out. We can make little changes along the way to make it work for us. So that's kind of like the long version of how it came about. I hosted a summit, and it was called the Content Experiment Summit. That was in 2020, early 2020. And I decided I just needed to change my entire business and to change my name too, because at the time it was still the Write Solutions, my podcast name was still at the time, as I was making this decision, the podcast name was still Stories in Small Business. So I just made a whole bunch of changes all at once.
You know what? I know you set this up as a tangent, Abby, but actually it is so aligned with my own discovery about business, lifestyle, and just about everything else. There's so many gurus and celebrity coaches and consultants out there that loudly proclaim this is the way. Mm-hmm. There is no the way. There's a way, and there's another way, and another way, and another way, and countless additional ways that nobody's teaching you because you figure it out for your own freaking self. And yes. I think we give up so much power and so much agency and even so much enjoyment of our business and our content creation. I call it outsourcing your self-esteem. You're literally handing over control of what you should do. And personally, I'd be curious if you agree. I think this all comes from acknowledged or unacknowledged perfectionism and this god-awful fear of getting it wrong, making mistakes, and failing. It's probably the biggest change I've had to make, and I encourage other women that I work with to make, is changing their relationship to the word failure and making everything you do an experiment. Everything. We have no idea if anything's going to work or not until we do it, no matter who else it has worked for.
Right. Well, yeah, because everybody's got their own personality, their own way of doing things. And yeah, no, I totally agree. I think part of it's perfectionism, and it's part of like the fear of what are other people going to think of me if I do it this way? What will people think? And I'm totally guilty of, you know, I say I don't care what people think. Of course I do, to an extent.
It's human nature.
Yeah. It's not going to really sway my decisions as much as it maybe used to. But yeah, it's just because as business owners, we are putting ourselves out there. We're putting our faces out there. We're putting our names out there. We're on social media. We're on podcasts and we're talking about things that, well, what are other people going to think about me if I say it this way or I do it that way? Yeah.
Yeah. And it's an ongoing challenge, I think. You know, no matter how long you've been sharing your thoughts, your ideas, your perspective, your way of doing things, someone's not going to like it. And you got to get used to that.
I got a nasty email just the other day about the way I was doing something. Oh, well.
We'd love to know how you respond to that now, because I'd like to think that at some point in time, I know you've been in business about the same amount of time that I have, and I'd like to think that there will come a time where I will get a nasty comment or even a customer that's not happy. And I will just say, you know, bless you, be on your way, you know, or just laugh. But yeah. I usually have to go through a process of other emotions before I can choose that, much faster than I used to. It used to slay me. I'd be like face down for a long time. Now I think, okay, what responsibility do I own in this? Is there any accuracy to it? Is there anything I need to do? And where do we go from here?
Yeah, that's kind of where I am also. I feel like it's been less than 48 hours. I have not responded yet. I'm actually not going to respond because it's not worth it. Like the person who emailed me has an issue and it's not about me. It's about them. Just like anything in life, you know, I mean, this is not a problem with me. This is a problem with them. And yeah, and you know, some of the concerns that she brought up might be valid. And I have I'm going to do some investigation to see. And then I'm just going to let it go because I'll fix things if they need to be fixed. It was an email timing issue and I'll see what the issue is. And yeah, bless and release. And it's mostly because of the tone of the email. It was not nice.
Some things don't warrant a response because they were they didn't have a positive intent to begin with. But it's such a good reflection on how treating things as an experiment is everything. Honestly, I don't care how certain you are or whose program you're following to the letter. Everything actually is an experiment. And it's so much lighter, easier, and more fun when you just acknowledge it and you cue it up that way. So I want to take you to the client journey. And I don't know if you always presented the way you do content as a content strategist in this way. But I realized that I talk a lot, no surprise, and I have a lot to say. And I think those are two different things. In fact, my niece, who lived with me for a year, pointed that out. She said, well, Auntie, you talk a lot and you have a lot to say. And I thought, wow, that's really astute. And what I realized is that when you just talk a lot, you might not have a lot to say. You might just be yammering on, running your mouth, just going in all kinds of different directions. But that doesn't really help people. What mm-hmm. actually helps people is to put your communication in some kind of orderly fashion that actually helps people move from point A to point B. So let's talk about how you think about that strategically and then get in the details.
Yeah, clearly people need some information. They need to go on a journey with you if they're going to make a decision about whether or not they're going to buy from you. If you're a retainer-based business, you know, whether or not they're going to continue working with you, there are certain steps along that journey. And I agree. There are some people who talk a lot and there are other people who have a lot to say. And there's a fine line between the two. Like you said, you know, you want to present yourself in a way that you have some expertise to share, because you do. If you're in this online space, if you're a business owner, you have something to share with your audience. And so it's about meeting them where they are and helping them along the journey with you.
I think meeting people where they are, Abby, actually turned out to be a big challenge for me. And I think for a lot of other experts that I work with, it took a little while for me to recognize that I'm so steeped in my own knowledge and my own expertise. I've been doing it for so long that I think in the beginning of creating content, I really was not in touch with the fact that I was talking, I don't want to say over people's heads, but I was talking past where they were in a way that it wasn't relatable. Yeah. And I needed to kind of remember where people actually begin and what languaging, what amount of information, the complexity of the information that people can actually respond to and integrate and even want to understand at different levels. I really had to learn that. And it was not easy because I had so much experience and expertise and I was just too close to it. I love the expression, you can't read the label from inside the jar. Because isn't that good? I love that. And it really helps me realize and remember, it's kind of a mantra that I use, that I'm too close to my own expertise. So I actually got help with it. So were you always aware of this? I think people who have a teaching background sometimes may have an advantage because you understand that helping people grow, helping people learn, and helping people make decisions requires like a curriculum, if you will, that is a process. And because I've learned from a lot of teachers, I realize, oh, that's a little bit of an, I don't want to say unfair advantage, but you understand teaching, leading, growing, and helping. There's a certain cadence to it. You can't just open your mouth and let whatever comes out come out and hope it works.
Yeah. Definitely not an unfair advantage. I paid my dues big time.
Fair. That's valid. I take it back.
But that said, I totally agree. I think my philosophy is with anything, no matter what stage of the journey anybody is in with you, approaching anything in business with the helper's hat versus the sales hat is 100% key. So we specialize in creating content for, you know, that is, we're attempting to educate people. We want to educate people. We don't create necessarily sales stuff. Podcasts are a tool to educate and nurture audiences. So are emails for the most part. So are, you know, your YouTube videos and your blogs. Those are ways to nurture people and to educate them and to be a helper. And when you do that, you know, and that's essentially what marketing is. It's not, you know, direct sales. We're not getting on sales calls necessarily, but we are educating people and nurturing people. And if you approach that with, I'm going to help somebody, I'm not going to sell something, I'm going to help someone, that is where the sales will actually come from. So putting on the helper hat is so important, and approaching it from what can I teach for free? What can I teach someone? I mean, that's what you do with the podcast. I mean, nobody's paying to listen to your podcast. You're here to help. And I'm here as your guest to help and to support your audience as well.
So when we are reaching people through our content, where do we begin with that? Like, let's say somebody's a brand new business owner. I tend to coach people who have been in business for a little while and they've sort of hit a ceiling. They're not able to move beyond it. But I also have really enjoyed helping several women who are brand new business owners who actually said, I want to do this right from the beginning. And it was so fun to help them launch and grow from absolutely nothing. That's super exciting. So they had the wherewithal to realize, you know, I don't have to go out here and make a bunch of mistakes. I can actually set this up right from the beginning. And what I told them, and I think it's in alignment with your six-stage client journey, is the first thing you have to do is create awareness, because as of this moment, you don't exist. Don't take it personally, but you do not exist.
That's 100% true. And so, I mean, brand awareness is where you want to start. And at the same time, I think that a lot of people are confused about what that means and what that actually looks like. So I talk a lot about what I call pillar content, which is the content that you own. And that content is super important. And yes, it is brand awareness, but it's also like the part of, it's mostly in the next step, educating and informing people and really nurturing them. Pillar content is the content that you own. It is, you own your website. So when you publish a blog post, you own that content. You own your podcast content. You're paying a host. So that is content that you own. YouTube is kind of it's a little bit shady, but it's a search engine. So it's a great place to be. But even before you start publishing blogs, or before you expect a blog or a podcast to bring you new followers and new people, I think the most important thing is to get yourself out there in front of other people's audiences. So that is where you really, because like you said, nobody knows who you are. Nobody knows that you exist. Back in the day, yes, having your own podcast, having your own blog, being active in Facebook groups, all of those things worked for me early in my business, but they don't necessarily work anymore because there's so much noise out there. So getting in front of other people's audiences, building relationships with people, to be a guest on their podcast, to speak on a stage or to speak in front of somebody's Facebook group, do a training in somebody's program, getting active in communities, in the right communities. This isn't about just finding the online business owner community and starting to post things in there. It's about building relationships. That's where the real brand awareness comes in. So before we hit record, you and I were talking about a podcast that I was on that I said was one of my dream podcasts. I actually built a relationship with the host before I pitched to be on her podcast. I found something that she and I share. It was exercise and working out, running. And I started commenting on all of her posts on Instagram that were related to that. And I actually left like a video about something that she did. I sent her a video in the Instagram DMs sharing about like some sort of connection that we had. And I truly think that that is why I was able to be on her podcast, because I built a relationship with her first. That is all about brand. And I was able to be on this podcast and you found me. So the brand awareness there worked, right?
It's really funny because I'm just thinking about, this makes so much sense. And I'm also imagining if you were teaching this to my community, which by the way, is exactly what you're doing right now. I can just imagine some people saying, yeah, but I'm really uncomfortable putting myself out there. And isn't that kind of spammy? And I don't appreciate it when some rando just pops up in my DMs and acts like she's my bestie or whatever. But there's a way to do it that is not the least bit gross or offensive. Yes. Or like, people pitch me all the time. People pitch you all the time. When it's done poorly, you don't even get a response. When it's done well, it leads to something like this. You pitched me the very same week I was about to pitch you. And yet I already had known of you for quite some time. It just hadn't, you know, moved to the right spot on my priority list. So it can be done in a way that is very nice and friendly and actually just as comfortable as walking up to another mom who's picking up her kid at the same time you're picking up yours.
Yep.
And it doesn't matter if you're an extrovert or an introvert.
No, it doesn't. And because I mean, I'm actually quite introverted. This is really easy for me because we're having a one-on-one conversation and I'm sitting in my guest bedroom in my pajama bottoms. And, you know, so it's very cut with my dogs here.
I won't ask you to stand up.
Yeah. But going to putting myself out there and going to a networking event, that is something I rarely will do. And even before COVID, that is not something I enjoyed doing. But this is really easy. So you find what works for you and how, you know, what you're comfortable with. And yes, it is really hard to put yourself out there and to do that first podcast interview or the first five podcast interviews, but it gets easier. It gets so much easier as you go.
Yeah. You start with the low hanging fruit, meaning the people that already know you, and you develop some comfort with that. And then you start working your way up to complete strangers and even people that you fangirl over.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
You don't do it overnight. So the first stage is brand awareness. People can't become your clients, customers, fans, followers, advocates, if they don't know who you are. So that's where everybody starts. That's where you're going to start. That's where Abby and I both started. And then the next thing you do is educate and inform. And I think most people will move to that. It's almost like it can be synonymous with the brand awareness because we start educating, informing as soon as we start putting content out there.
Yeah. And so in that stage, you continue blogging, you continue podcasting, continue doing whatever you're doing. But you should also have things like nurturing emails so you're finding ways to collect email addresses from your audience. So you have some really awesome opt-in, like a challenge or an ebook or something like that, that is going to allow them to learn more from you. Because you're going to talk about that on your other, during brand awareness, you're going to talk about that when you're a guest on people's podcasts. You're going to talk about that when you're doing maybe a JV partnership of some sort, or you're teaching a workshop. And then you're going to just keep nurturing them. So you're going to, it's like continuing the message, giving them more information about, you know, whatever your main talking points are for your business. So, and like, I know I've mentioned, you mentioned the minimum viable content marketing at the very beginning of the episode. I'm talking about a lot of different options. Pick one. Do not pick all of them. Pick one, maybe two in each stage and do those. When you try to do all of them, you're going to make yourself go bonkers. So, yeah.
Now, what's on the menu, Abby? I want to make sure everybody understands. When you say pick one, do you mean don't have a blog, a podcast, a YouTube channel, and go live? Yeah. Just pick one content pillar. But do you also just pick one social media platform or other way of marketing? I mean, everyone thinks I got to do all the things.
Yeah.
And you know, for the first year that I was online, I had a weekly blog, a weekly podcast, a weekly YouTube, twice a week emails. And I was seeing all my individual clients. Obviously, I burned out
80 hours a week.
Yes. Right? And I was totally burned out. And, you know, my husband was complaining. You know, he wanted me to show my driver's license every time I walked in the door because he said he didn't recognize me anymore. Who's that woman? You know, so I couldn't keep it up. And honestly, it wasn't just a matter that I couldn't sustain it, Abby. It wasn't actually effective.
Yeah.
This notion that you have to be everywhere all the time. It doesn't work. And I think I really appreciate how you are talking so much about the minimum viable content marketing because more is not better. Hey, it's Diane with a quick interruption to the episode because I've got a couple questions I just need to ask you. One, are you where you want to be in your business? Are you making the money you want to make, working the hours you want to work, seeing the clients that you want to see, and getting the income and impact that you went into business to get? And if the answer is no, what's holding you back? Why is there a gap between where you are and where you want to be? Do you know the answer? In my experience working with female solopreneurs, so many of them don't even really know what's standing in their way, and that is so frustrating. So I created a little quiz called What's Holding You Back? There's a link to it in the show notes. If this is you, please take the quiz. And if you do, DM me on Instagram at Coach Diane Wingert and let me know your results. Now, on the other hand, if you already know what's holding you back, if you already know what the obstacles are that are getting in your way from achieving the income and impact that you deserve and desire, then I don't want you to take the quiz. Forget about the quiz. Go directly to the other link in the show notes and book a consult with me. I may be the very coach, and this may be the year that you put all of that behind you and really have the business that you went into business to have. For everybody else, keep on listening. And if you find value in what you hear, don't forget to leave me a rating and review on Apple or wherever you're listening. Here we go, back to the show.
It's funny because at first I said I would never own my own practice. And now I own my own practice. And I would say, I'm never going to take it any more than just treating patients. Now I'm thinking about how can I start my own
institute?
Yeah, exactly. Even like training other therapists, having a certification with my name that I am, I haven't thought of the name yet, but I'm certified in this technique or whatever the case may be. And really just helping other therapists help their patients the way I help mine.
No, it's not. And, you spread yourself so thin that you're either copying and pasting content from one social platform to the next, which doesn't work because each platform is different. There's a different format and you have different people following you on different platforms, so that doesn't work. And you're spreading yourself just way too thin. And it's not quality. It becomes quantity over quality, which is not what we want. So yes, where are your people showing up? What type of content do they want to consume? I have a podcast because I did an audience survey and my audience told me that they like to listen to podcasts. That's the primary. And I was just blogging before 3 times a week, by the way, which was way too much. And again, it wasn't, like you said, it wasn't working. So figure out what type of content they want to consume, create that. And then you can have one main opt-in where you send most of your people to, have one opt-in to start. Have one social platform, maybe two, where you show up regularly. Use a scheduler to help with that. Mm-hmm. And then have a welcome sequence to make sure that you nurture people right from the very beginning. Email once a week, every other week, if that's what works for you. And call it a day. I mean, you do not need to be everywhere and do all of the things. So as much as like as we go through this process and we talk about this and I'm talking about different things that you can do, pick one of them from each category. Start with that. Get a really good cadence as far as your timing. Get a good cadence as far as, your own processes. And then figure out how to add some more later if you choose to do so.
Yeah. And you may not choose to do so later. And that's perfectly okay, too. So as I was learning your system, first brand awareness, then educate and inform, then demonstrate your expertise. I got to admit a little bit of confusion between educate and inform and demonstrate your expertise. Aren't I demonstrating my expertise while I'm educating and informing? You got to help me here.
Yeah. And again, just like, educating and informing kind of blends really well with brand awareness. Everything kind of blends from one to the next. And also, it depends on your clients or your potential clients' state of mind, where they are also. But you could do, so this could be like case studies. It could be a discovery call that you actually get on a call with somebody at this point and you talk through maybe successes that you've had with another client. It could be some more how-to videos, paid masterclasses. So these could be kind of a low-cost masterclass where they're actually, yes, you've technically converted them to a customer at this point through a low-cost masterclass. But yeah, something like that that's going to get them to the next stage of a higher priced offer, a retainer, or, you know, whatever it is that you're ultimately trying to get people into.
Gotcha. And as you are constantly doing all of these things, because hopefully you're getting in front of various audiences, and yes, the number of people that are now aware of your brand are is growing and moving along the journey. Like, they didn't know who you were. Now they know who you are. Now you've educated and informed them a little bit. Now you've demonstrated you're not just a person who's talking. You have a lot to say, and you know what you're saying, and you can back it up. Mm-hmm. And now they've put a little bit of money on the table. They've opened their wallet. They've ordered your lower priced item. Mm-hmm. I've heard a lot of different philosophies about this, from don't give too much content away for free because you're training people to expect you to keep educating and informing them and demonstrating your expertise and basically taking care of them for free. So I'd love to hear your philosophy about this. I can actually see it both ways. I can imagine if you do too much free content, people will get so accustomed to free content from you that when you now start asking them to pay you, they're like, wait, what? You want money?
Yeah.
Yeah. Versus people saying, oh, I've been waiting for you to ask. Like, of course I want to pay you. You have already helped me so much that let me give you some money. I don't think most of us wouldn't have ever considered that that would be a possibility. And I actually heard it from someone at some time. Like, I was wondering when you were going to ask me for some money. Like, you've done so much for me already. I was like, what's happening? I was so surprised.
Yes.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah. So I love this question. So first of all, let's talk about like the discovery call process. Obviously, when you get somebody on the phone one-to-one, it's you don't want to give everything away, because then there's no reason for them to hire you, because you're actually speaking directly to them. When it comes to the content that you're putting out there, so the blogs and the videos and the podcast episodes and workshops or free challenges, things like that, there will always, always, always be people who all they want is the free stuff, and they're never going to hire you anyway. So there are always going to be those people. There will also be people who they want the free thing, and they are going to gather as much free stuff as possible, you know, and maybe they'll eventually hire you. When you put out free content, yes, it's true that someone could potentially take those, all of those podcast episodes and put them together and in a way that they think that they don't need you, but they're never going to get the same service and the same result by doing that as they would from hiring you directly. So I guess my answer to that question or to that philosophy is give away the free stuff. People will hire you when they see that you are an expert and you can get them results, and let go of the people who will always just go for the free stuff. Obviously, you want to nurture them. So if you have like a free challenge or something like that, that you offer them, yeah, you want an email sequence that's going to nurture them into, there are other things that you can do. There's other steps and processes, and to kind of nurture them into a purchase or into a discovery call with you. But it's okay to give away things for free. I have probably somebody could figure out how to do what I do strictly from the you know, the podcasts and, you know, the freebies and things like that. I have 168 podcast episodes. Nobody's going to go through all those episodes. Or they're not going to get the, you know, they're not going to get the individualized attention and support as they would if they hired me one-on-one, or if they joined a program or something like that. So give away the free stuff, and don't worry about the people who are only after the free stuff, because you probably don't want to work with them anyway.
True that. Do you think are you one of the people that thinks you need to give different things in your free content than in your paid content? That's another thing that I hear a lot about. Some people say you give them the what in your free content, you save the how for the people that pay you. And then there are a lot of people, they just give exactly the same stuff, but mm-hmm. by the time the person has come along on the customer journey a little bit further in what we're going to be talking about in a moment, they are paying for access and a relationship and mm-hmm. one-on-one connection, even though the information is the same. Now, I know there's many other philosophies, but if we think about you know, like those being the two ends of the spectrum. Either yeah. you give them certain type of content for free and you reserve the paid content for your actual clients and customers, versus the content is all the same, but a paid client or customer is paying for access, relationship, and the intimacy of one-on-one help.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I definitely give away the how in my free content. Absolutely. And yeah, I do. and, you know, maybe that's not the best philosophy or the best way to do it, but that's what I do, because I think, you know, back in, so I was an elementary school teacher before I left to run my business full time. When I left teaching, I had no idea what I was doing, no clue. And it took me a really long time to kind of find my feet and to figure out what to do. And I always said that I would, and part of that was because I was $50,000 in student loan debt. I had no savings. I was scraping by. I was a single mom. And I was like, you know what? Why can't I find something affordable? Why can't I find support and help that's affordable that I can actually get? And so I told myself then that I would always offer some sort of support for people who really needed it and wanted it. I offer a one-to-one service, a done-for-you service for clients. So while I can give away stuff for free, and I do give away a lot of the how, my one-to-one clients get me, they get the access. And so I think it's very different. I don't think it's the same thing at all. They're getting so much more by, you know, paying me to actually do it for them. The people who I work with are not going to do it themselves. They have maybe in the past, but they're at a stage in their business where they don't want to do it for themselves. And I also want to support the people who are trying to do it themselves. So some people might think that that's misaligned, but it's just something I feel really strongly about.
No,
so I just continue to do it.
Abby, I love that you are very generous. I listen to your podcast. You give so much information and detail that if a highly motivated, scrappy solopreneur wants to DIY their stuff, you literally take them by the hand down the entire path. And I think what you're revealing indirectly in this mm-hmm. is your personal and business values. Like, I was a single mom of three kids for 10 years. My kids were 10, 12, and 15 when I got divorced. They were all grown and flown by the time I remarried. So, mm-hmm. and I like, you know, I like working with single moms. And I think sometimes once you've gone through an experience like that and you understand that there are very hardworking, very determined, highly motivated people out there who just can't pay you, mm-hmm. but they love what you do. And maybe they even have a goal. I had someone reach out to me once saying, I love your podcast. You have helped me so much. And I have a goal to make enough money in my business that I can hire you and be one of your one-on-one clients. I'm literally setting that as one of my goals. So I believe that happens too. And I think, you know, it's your business. So it needs to be aligned with your values. And one of your values seems to be generosity. And so it doesn't have to be what anyone else would teach or what anyone else thinks is better. It's what's good for you. And I have the same philosophy, so it's good for me too. I think being generous with our knowledge and our expertise does not mean we're giving away the farm or leaving money on the table. I just think of it as I used to have some pro bono clients when I was a therapist. I worked in nonprofits for many, many years. None of those people actually paid money out of their own pocket. You know, they were on government grants. And so I just think that the people that need us find us, and there are so many yeah. ways to help. Some people have the resources to pay you to do it for them, and you're happy to do it. And some people you can help for free that you're never even going to know. I think that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it's really important to me.
So the ones that will hire you mm-hmm. will then be converted from someone who like knows, likes, and trusts you. They're aware of you. You've educated mm-hmm. and informed them. You've demonstrated your expertise. And now they're going to make the leap to becoming a customer. And we've talked about having the low price offer so they can yes. open their wallet just a little bit, because it's scary. You know, some people are reckless with their money, but most people are not. Mm-hmm. And they've now crossed over and they are now in a different kind of relationship with you. How does yeah. the content relationship change at that point?
for the conversion piece, you've got things like your sales page or an official proposal, having a fact sheet, doing a demonstration for clients, depending on what, that's not something that I necessarily do because of just the nature of my business. Or if you have like a software of some sort, maybe you have a free trial or really low price trial, something like that. But those are the pieces of content that should be in place to convert them to a customer. The proposal and quote, I think, is really important. And that's something that you can set up as a template. A lot of people use Dubsado. I use PandaDocs because I can just set it up and I can make a copy each time.
What's the name again?
It's called PandaDoc.com. And I use that for my proposals and have for the last year or so. And it's just a really great, easy way to you can automate it if you because you can connect it to QuickBooks and other systems. Everything's automated.
So. I'll link to that in the show notes if people are interested. Yeah. So good.
So yeah, that those are the pieces of content that will help to convert them to a customer. But then once you have them, and notice that's like step four. So we had brand awareness, educating and informing your audience, demonstrating your expertise, and then converting them to the customer. But then it's not over. Like there's still a journey that you're taking your people on beyond that. Like,
I think a lot of people drop the ball. Yeah, let's do that. Because I think a lot of people, there's so much energy, so much effort that's being placed on getting people to know, like, and trust you. And now they've become a client and they kind of drop the ball in terms of nurturing the relationship. And because I know the last stage is retaining, I think there's often so much energy put into getting new clients that we actually kind of neglect the ones we already have. So take us through that.
Yes. Yeah. So once somebody is a customer, there are a lot of things you can do to expand that relationship with them. And when you expand the relationship, it also, often turns into more revenue for you. And it's so much easier to keep a client and to grow a client than it is to find a new client, in my experience. So it's all about the onboarding, really impressing them at the beginning, having, you know, added bonuses that you can add on. Maybe you have additional services. Maybe they bought one service from you and you have additional services you can offer. Those are things that are not necessarily, so I want to totally backtrack for a second. Content is not just the written pieces. It's all of the things that you say and that you do throughout your relationship with, you know, the prospective client or the client. So if you get on regular calls with your client, you know, talking about different services that you offer, you know, and maybe there's services that you offer just to current clients that you don't necessarily promote. So just making sure that they know, if they mention that they're thinking about doing something that's related to something that you can help them with, talk about that. I have a client who she's been a client for about 18 months, and about every 3 months, we have some extra projects that we do together that are not things that I promote. They're not things that I talk about, but there are things that I can do and that I'm really good at. And we add those on. And that's additional revenue for me. She doesn't have to use a different contractor. It's very streamlined. Yeah. And then just like your regular personalized communication that you have with your clients, Slack. I like to check in with people on Slack or on Voxer, you know, not because for any reason, except that I just want to check in because I meet with my clients once a month. So it's nice to chat with them or have some sort of point of connection between them. And then you have your, you know, then the last step. So you have a client and they've been a client with you for a while. And then eventually, maybe they don't need to work with you anymore. Maybe they've up-leveled or they've shifted direction or you've shifted direction. We don't have to keep our clients forever. It's nice to keep them around for a while, but they're not going to stay around forever, and that's okay. And so that next stage is about retaining that relationship. So staying connected to them, not just like, oh, well, they don't want to work with me anymore. I'm done. No, maintain the relationship, because if you've done a really good job for them with them, they're going to refer you to their audience members, to their clients, to their connections, to their business friends. So maintaining that contact through Voxer or sending them regular emails or sending them a nice handwritten note. I mean,
former clients. So let's say you, because for example, a lot of coaches and consultants have a signature system or framework that they take people through. They take them through the transformation, they reach the goals, and now they're done. Now, they may have additional offerings because the fifth level of your program is expand your offerings. And I do want to touch on that a little bit more deeply. But if they are not choosing to take advantage of those additional offerings, they don't have a need for them, they don't have the budget for it, it's just not on their radar right now, you will continue to reach out, continue to nurture, check in a friendly way, because maybe they don't need you again, but by being top of mind in a non-obtrusive, non-stalky, not annoying way, you may contact them just at a time when they have spoken with a biz bestie and thought, oh no, this is somebody I should tell about Abby Herman, right? But if you just drop them like yesterday's newspaper, not that anybody reads newspapers anymore, but you get it. If you just drop them when you're done, then that's missed opportunity. A lot of people have this idea that, yeah, but we're done. Isn't that like being annoying to keep bothering them? It's like, no, you're delivering value. And by the way, it's 2022. Everybody knows how to unsubscribe. Yes. They really do.
Absolutely. And yeah, and you can just, I mean, I was actually just thinking about this morning. I was thinking about a particular client and I thought, you know, like, I feel like I'm always thinking about work. I was walking to the gym. I'm always thinking about work. I'm always thinking about, you know, things that would benefit clients, current or former. And I know we all do that. Or we'll see something, we'll see an email or hear a podcast episode. Oh, so-and-so would really benefit from that. Or I remember so-and-so talking about that 6 months ago, a year ago, whatever. Send them that podcast episode, forward them that email, send that, you know, tag them in that post on Facebook or LinkedIn. Because yeah, again, it keeps you top of mind and it lets them know that you're thinking about them, because you are. I mean, you are thinking about them, whether you want to admit it or not. We're thinking about our former clients, our current clients, our prospective clients. So yeah, it's not stalkerish. It's not annoying unless you're doing it every day. It's not annoying unless you're emailing them, or it's not spammy unless you're emailing them all the time or making an ask all the time. Just let them know that you're thinking about them.
I think letting people know you're thinking about them without asking for anything in return is very powerful.
Yes.
I want to ask you one more question before we wrap up, Abby, and that's in terms of expanding your offerings. A lot of people that I work with have a program, and this is what they do. And they oftentimes have a hard time figuring out, do I really need like a whole tier of offerings? Do I really need to have a one-on-one program, a group program, a low-price program, a high-price program, a VIP program? What is your personal philosophy based on your own experience and the entrepreneurs that you work with? Do you think people can really just have one offer, or do we really need to have two or three? What's your philosophy about that?
Oh, that's a great question. I would say simple is better. Keep it simple, because, and I speak from experience, losing track of what those different offerings are and just not being able to promote or talk about the offers as well when you have so many different offers. People don't know what you do if you have too many offers. So I would say keep it simple. And, you know, if your initial offer is a $10,000 program, there's a lot of upfront work that's going to have to go into getting people into that offer, into that program. So I would just, you know, think about that and what that looks like for you as far as your marketing, as far as your relationship building. And can you get in front of the right people who are willing to put down $10,000 in their initial, you know, work with you? So
totally makes sense. When you were talking earlier about, as you're working with someone and thinking about additional offerings that you could make, it's almost like when you go to a restaurant and you order an entree, and the waiter suggests a wine pairing or an appetizer that would go really well with that. It doesn't feel like, you don't feel like you're being sold to. Right. You feel like this person is trying to enhance the experience I've already decided to have. Mm-hmm. And if it's done well, that's probably exactly how it feels. So I know that you've put together a really nice freebie to bring together everything that we've been talking about today in the steps of the customer journey. So we are going to link to that in the show notes. Do you want to tell us just a teeny bit about what they can look forward to if they want to grab that?
Yeah, it's a workbook that walks through the client journey and it incorporates minimum viable content marketing. So even though you're going to, you've heard a bunch of lists of different things that you could do here, and you'll see it in the client journey map that is in the workbook, it really focuses on finding the bare minimum that you can handle, that you can do right now, and then finding ways to expand on that in the future. So, and that is at thecontentexperiment.com/driven. You can grab your copy right there.
Perfect. And I will also make sure I link to it in the show notes so you can just grab that right from your phone or your laptop, wherever you happen to be listening. So Abby Herman, please listen to her podcast, The Content Experiment. She's, as I said, very, very generous with what she teaches. And if you are an online entrepreneur, you are a content creator. So you might as well be good at it, and you might as well let this wonderful lady help you.
Thank you so much, Diane.
Awesome. That's a wrap.
You've been listening to the Driven Woman podcast with Diane Wingert. Want more straight talk and strategy each week that will take you from spinning to winning? Don't forget to hit subscribe in your podcast player so you won't miss a single episode. Then head on over to the Driven Woman free and private Facebook group community. See you there.